the search for common ground is a perennial challenge for the American body politic. It's a frustrating challenge, but that doesn't mean we should avoid it. It is absolutely essential for this democracy to work, that we reach out to people with whom we disagree. Let's face it, we are founded all the way, if you go back to the 18th century and look at the theology, the philosophies of the Enlightenment and the theologies coming out of Christendom that this country was founded in. If you look at what people actually believe, they believed in the worth of the individual. Well, you get, 4 million individuals or 235 million individuals or 335, you've got everybody thinking their own thing. They've got their own ideas about it. Everyone's unique. Everybody's got their own tweaks on those philosophies and religions, and we're not participating in them at all. So how do you take such a diverse group of people and bring them together in a polity? You have to have a polity where you've got security from attack on the outside, and you've got an internal culture that tolerates dissent. How do you bring people with such diverse backgrounds together so that they can have a humane conversation answering one of the most fundamental questions, how do we live together?
Things have changed over time. I can look back and you can do the same as well. And I think we can probably find common ground on what has happened over the past couple of decades. There was a time when you had three networks and the evening or morning newspaper. News traveled a little slower. And then as we developed these news outlets, cable news crept in, things shifted. Social media comes into play. Information and ideas and opinions are traveling at the speed of light, it seems like. Is that what's happened here? That just there's been a shift in how information moves in our country?
It's a big part of it. I mean, unfortunately, we have what I call keyboard courage. I mean, you have people who are trolling who just want to say the most outrageous thing or get others to say the most outrageous thing, and then they spread that around. And it has so coarsened our culture and degraded our political discourse that, I mean, all the benefits, all the wonderful things that the internet and tweets and everything else have brought about also have, it's a double-edged sword. It's brought about a lot of discord in our culture. You can certainly look at all of the things that have polarized us, whether it's the congressional calendar or social sorting or gerrymandering or any number of things. And, you know, when we touch on social media, the internet, that certainly has played a role. But I think the essential problem with American culture right now is that we have produced a culture that has made a lot of people lonely. And when people are lonely, the corollary of that is they're not friends. We've lost the old Ciceronian, the old Aristotelian idea of civic friendship and how important it is to recover if we're going to get back on track as a country.
There are those moments of unity that bring us all together, no matter what our political ideologies may be. We are all Americans at our core. And I know you're going to draw upon a great leader that this country will dearly miss, and we've just lost President George H.W. Bush. You draw upon a lot of the essence and the core beliefs of this former president.
George H.W. Bush lived at a time when it was still noble to serve the public in an effort to find common ground for the common good. And we've gotten so far away from that that it broke his heart. I mean, talk about breaking the heart of a man to see how much incivility had developed. He came from a New England blue blood background from both sides of his family that really treasured service. They went into public service. They went into politics, not for personal aggrandizement, not for personal enrichment, but really, believe it or not, to serve. That was the way you lived your life. It was the whole ethos of those families, that they had been privileged, and there's that old WASP, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant ethos of giving back to others, make the community better. George H.W. Bush is Exhibit A.
What is his message? What is your message? You talk about where we are as a country. How do we overcome this challenge? What would George H.W. Bush tell everyone in the room?
Well, he had such a great perspective on public service that he would not let ideology get in the way. He would not go to the extremes. He would say, resist the extremes. And if he accepted the thesis, and I think he would, that Americans are lonely. And so out of that loneliness comes sometimes a bitterness and an anger because you're separated, you're cut off. I think he would try to say, look, we are together and you have too much talent. You citizens have too much to give to this community. Even in the most humble among us have something to give, and we have something to give to you as well. So I think he would emphasize those empathetic connections with us. I think he would tell us that we're going to be all right. But we just have to make sure we keep the big picture in mind and not just look at our tribal or identity politics or our tribal instincts, but look at the big picture of what is in the best interest of the whole country.
Where does this loneliness come from?
This literature about American loneliness goes way back. It goes all the way to Tocqueville. I've been reading Democracy in America, which is, of course, arguably the best book about America ever written and the best book about democracy ever written, and the two best books come together in this one great volume. And Tocqueville said that aristocracies link everybody in a great chain of being, from the king all the way down through the peasant. They're all linked socially. They all have a place. They all have a sense of belonging. Now, there are disadvantages, obviously, with that system. We broke away from that system. But democracy breaks the chain. It atomizes each one of us. And Tocqueville said that what he was observing were two conditions where loneliness were arising. Now, this is back in the 1830s. Before mass media, but he observed it on the frontier, where people were thrown back on their own resources with self-reliance. That's kind of a good loneliness. I mean, when you're settling a new country, but even in the midst of our cities, right, even here in Michigan, when he came through Michigan in the 1830s, he saw a loneliness of people who were not connecting with others. They had not formed communities here. So he predicted that Americans would have a tendency to fall back into their own hearts. It's a very striking passage in part two of Democracy in America. And unfortunately, it's become quite the situation now. 50% of Americans report, according to four studies that have come out in the last year, that we are essentially a lonely people. We're talking about huge samples of people, up to 20,000 people. 50% have reported that they do not believe they have a significant relationship, even in their own home.
What do you recommend to people to get over not only that domestic loneliness, but also the civic loneliness that they feel?
First of all, you have to recognize the issue, and then it takes a dogged determination to overcome it by meeting with your friends. I mean, is it a bridge group? Is it playing cards? Is it going bowling instead of bowling alone, as Robert Putnam described? Is it going to football games together? Start somewhere. Then get involved in politics. Not in the angry politics that Bush wanted us to get away from, but a sense of politics of possibility, that we're in it together. We can work with people because we all share the same fate as Americans, ultimately. And I think that there's so many civic organizations out there that people can start to get involved with. I mean, let's get out in the community and do our best to connect with others. We'll be a lot happier. You'll live longer. There are a lot of health benefits to it. You'll have fewer colds in the wintertime, all the things that we need to fortify ourselves in Michigan in the winter.
Gleaves Whitney, director of the Hauenstein Center for Presidential Studies at Grand Valley State University, thank you so much.
Thank you, Patrick.